The sound of Yehu's horses reaches me long before his face does. I am queen, priestess, mother. I will not cower. I paint my eyes, not in vanity, but in ritual, the mark of a priestess preparing for death, the final offering to my goddess. They call me Jezebel, destroyer, whore. But I am the handmaiden of Asherah, the tree of life, the mother whose altars I raised with my own hands. It is not my cruelty they fear, but the power of the goddess who stands beside me. Yehu orders my death. Hands appear behind me, shoving my back into the wall and below the hoofs of horses. As I fall, I do not scream. My last thought is of Asherah, the lady of the sea, who roots herself deep in the earth and stretches towards the stars. They think the dogs devour me, but they do not. The goddess takes me back. My blood sinks into the soil, and from it, the sacred groves will rise again. They've called me harlot, sorceress, whore of nations. They've taken my name and turned it into an insult for any woman who dares to speak, to lead, to defy. But I am more than their curses. I am Jezebel, daughter of Ethbaal, priest king of Sidon, queen of Israel. I did not bow my head when I entered a foreign court. I brought with me the strength of my gods, the dignity of my people, the fire of Asherah and Baal who sustained my ancestors. I was a wife, a mother, a queen. I defended the covenant of my gods as fiercely as Elijah defended his. Was that my crime? That I did not betray my heritage to please a patriarchal priesthood? They wrote me into their scriptures as a warning. The woman who led a king astray, the woman who painted her eyes and met her death with defiance. But the truth is, I stood unbroken all the way to the end. If you speak my name today, do not spit it as an insult. Speak it with the knowledge that I bore the weight of a clash between worlds. My story is not of shame, but of resistance. Resistance that still teaches humanity how power, gender, and faith are entangled. Long before she set foot in Israel, Jezebel was more than a princess. She was a priestess, born to King Ethbaal of Tyre, a former high priest of the goddess Astarte. Jezebel was steeped in the sacred rites of Phoenician religion from an early age. Her upbringing was not just royal, it was ritual. Raised among the incense-saturated groves and moonlit stars of Sidon, she was trained in the mysteries of the goddess, where the divine feminine was not erased or hidden, but exalted. Her marriage to King Ahab of Israel in the 9th century BC was, on the surface, a diplomatic alliance that was meant to secure peace between Phoenicia and Israel. But Jezebel did not arrive as a silent consort. She came as a cultural emissary, a spiritual leader, and a woman determined to uphold the traditions of her people. As queen, she promoted the worship of Baal and Asherah, not in secret, but with royal authority. The Bible tells us she housed 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah at her own table. This was no passive devotion. It was priestly leadership. Jezebel oversaw many feasts, maintained the sacred groves of Asherah, and likely presided over rituals that honored Asherah as the mother of all, the nurturing yet powerful divine feminine. Her actions ignited a religious firestorm. In a land where the prophets of Yahweh were calling for monotheistic exclusivity, Jezebel's open reverence for Asherah was not just controversial, it was heretical. To the Yahwist establishment, she embodied everything that they feared: religious pluralism, female spiritual authority, and resistance to cultural assimilation. Her very presence challenged the patriarchal monopoly of Yahweh's priesthood. Jezebel did not convert. She did not suppress her tradition. Instead, she asserted it publicly, boldly, and at great personal cost. This religious defiance was deeply threatening. Elijah, the prophet of Yahweh, became her most outspoken opponent. Their conflict was not simply theological, it was cosmic. Elijah called down fire from heaven. Jezebel fed the priests of the goddess. Each embodied a worldview that was at war, one that was patriarchal and exclusive, the other inclusive and rooted in ancient goddess worship. Yet Jezebel's power was not confined to temples. She wielded real political agency. In 1 Kings 21, when Ahab sulked over a vineyard that he could not obtain, it was Jezebel who orchestrated a legal proceeding, albeit a corrupt one, but she orchestrated it nonetheless to acquire the land for the crown. While this is painted as treachery in the biblical text, scholars argue that it reflects the legitimate exercise of royal authority as understood in Near Eastern traditions. Queens like Jezebel, they often acted as legal agents, and they were decision makers. Her actions, while condemned by the biblical authors, mirror common practices among powerful royal women of her time. But Jezebel was more than a political or religious rival. She was systematically vilified. In the Deuteronomistic history, she is reduced to the archetype of the foreign seductress. Her story is shaped by anxiety about women in power, about foreign influence, and above all, about gods who were not Yahweh. Her death in 2 Kings 9 is both gruesome and symbolic. Thrown from a window, trampled by horses, her body devoured by dogs. The text lingers on her painted eyes, weaponizing her beauty to suggest vanity, lust, and wickedness, traits that biblical writers love to assign to powerful women. Later interpretations only deepened this vilification. The church fathers, including Tertullian, used Jezebel's name to denounce sexual immorality and heresy. In Revelation 2:20, Jezebel becomes a metaphor for seduction and false prophecy, a cipher for dangerous women who challenge orthodoxy. Over time, her name transformed from a historical queen into a label, one that is used to shame women who spoke too boldly, led too publicly, or worship too freely. But modern scholarship tells us a more nuanced story. Archaeologist William Deaver points out that Asherah worship was widespread in Israel way before Yahwistic reformers began to suppress it. Jezebel then was not introducing a foreign cult, but reviving an older religious tradition that the official record tried to erase. Other scholars have argued that her story is less about personal wickedness and more about the political and religious purge of the goddess from Hebrew faith. Feminist scholars have worked to recover Jezebel's complexity. Esther Fuchs, Carol Myers, and Althea Brenner all highlight how Jezebel was demonized, not only for her gender, but for her refusal to abandon her gods, her culture, and her voice. She represents a different model of womanhood, powerful, unyielding, and spiritually sovereign. Today, the name Jezebel is still used as a weapon. It's been hurled at women who refuse to conform, particularly at Black women in the American cultural imagination, often to shame, sexualize, or silence them. But reclaiming Jezebel means uncovering the story beneath the smear campaign. She was not just a queen, or a villain, or a seductress. She was a priestess of the goddess, a defender of spiritual plurality, and a woman who refused to be erased. To revisit Jezebel's story is to ask hard questions. Why are powerful women so often recast as dangerous? What happens when religious conflict is waged on the bodies and reputations of women? And what does it mean to restore dignity to those whom history has tried to vilify? remembering Jezebel not as a symbol of shame, but as a woman of conviction, we begin to undo the legacy of silence that surrounds the feminine divine. Her story challenges us to see how history is shaped, not by truth alone, but by those in power who write it. So why does Jezebel matter today? Number one, even now, calling someone a Jezebel is shorthand for labeling a woman as sexually immoral, manipulative, or dangerous. This distortion continues to be weaponized against women of color, particularly Black women in modern culture. Jezebel was not simply a seductress or a schemer. She was a political figure who defended her people's traditions against cultural erasure. And her story challenges us to ask the following questions. Why are powerful women so often vilified? How do cultural and religious clashes get mapped onto women's bodies and reputations? What does it mean to reclaim a name once used as a curse and see it in a model of resistance? Jezebel's story is not simply about a queen who clashed with prophets. It's about how history punishes women who stand their ground. To reclaim Jezebel is to uncover how narratives are shaped by power, by patriarchy, and by fear of the feminine. In restoring her humanity, we not only heal her name, but also challenge the patterns that continue to silence and vilify women today.